mutation in men, but nonetheless, and breast cancer and prostate cancer in men. I don't know what the connection is emotionally. I can only guess.
Well, it has a, it really, the, you know, the prostate, I believe, is analogous in the metaphysical realm to the ovaries, which really speak to our creativity. And, you know, what my...
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, the stream, since we are still without a transmitter, is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the Thursday edition. Today is August 12th, 2010. Stay tuned.
Across to you, my feet are like ice. But you don't mind, you don't mind the cold. And you don't want me to go. But if I stay, if I stay, what does it mean?
That was Anita Coates, The Curse and the Gift. The selection was Cold in the Morning. Well, you are tuned to www.freakradio.org, the stream, because as I understand it, we're still off the air because our transmitter does not have a home. If you're interested, and I've been saying this for about a month and a half now, but it's important, we do need a site still, and we are still together as a collective at the moment. And we're looking for a site on the west side, the north side, or the east side, but not downtown, which has a roof or a tree that we can put an antenna up in. We need a dry, locked, secure space for the transmitter. We can visit for maintenance and repair. We need access to electricity, 15-amp outlet. We need access to the Internet. And we will provide an interruptible power supply, UPS, for the Internet source and the router, $50 a month for electricity usage, and also information on what to do when the FCC comes, if they do. And you can reach us at www.freakradio.org. You can email us at frsc@freakradio.org, FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, at freakradio.org. You can call us at 427-4523, 427-4523. The on-air number, and I am not on the air, but I'm on the stream, and I am broadcasting live at the moment, which you'll be able to, if you're listening to me on August 12th, 2010, you're probably listening to me live between 6 and 8 in the evening, which is the normal time for this show. And you're welcome to call in. And the call-in number is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, 427-3772. Do give a call in if anything you hear interests you, if you have news you want to report, or, if you have some updates on one thing or another that is kind of relevant to the subject matter that I'm talking about, which is kind of focusing this evening, as I have been the last few shows, on Peace Camp 2010, the homeless-run encampment which has moved from the courthouse to City Hall in front of the very front lawn of Mike Rotkin, Mayor Mike Rotkin's lair. And I guess I'm told, I don't know if it's true, but I'm told by some homeless folks who apparently have talked to officials that Mike is out of town on vacation. And while he's out of town, his mischievous police are doing their business. So I'm going to begin to play some interviews from Peace Camp 2010 at its new location, which it moved to on Tuesday night, actually on Wednesday morning, very early. This was sort of plotted out by the sort of the central organizers of Peace Camp 2010, and these were all homeless people who did this, and they all decided to move at 3 or 4 in the morning and come on down to City Hall, set up there, and they informed the media, and they got all kinds of TV media there in this obscenely early hour of the morning. Very impressive. We're going to be playing some of the discussion of what happened. They were also, of course, greeted by police, who immediately gave a ticket to one man for sleeping and then realized that the media were there and beat a hasty retreat. This was night before last. Since I'm talking to you on August 12th, this was the night of August 10th. So I'm going to begin to play some of the interviews I found. I came down there about 5 in the morning and did some interviews. But these are interviews somewhat later in that morning, around 6:30, and you're going to hear the voices of the folks at the new Peace Camp 2010 and some descriptions of what went down. It's August 11th, 2010. I'm in front of City Hall. It's about 6:25, and I'm talking. Wednesday early morning, so that would be August 11th, not August 10th.
PJ Groove, Fresh Ground News.
Who is a man who's for some time been working on and now is increasing his work on his on the Fresh Ground blog.
It's an online news advertising piece.
And you've been taking some photos of this recently arrived protest at City Hall. You heard about it at KION when you woke up this morning. There it was. And you live nearby, or?
No, I'm a Santa Cruz resident.
And it sounds like you're sympathetic with some of the goals of the protesters.
Well, rather.
Sorry. You have some sympathies, perhaps, with some of the goals of the protesters. There's a sign that says "End the sleeping ban." You were saying you have some thoughts about that.
Well, I believe.
Here's some garbage. I just cleaned this up because I'm a white man. Here's some garbage. You guys want to clean garbage up?
This is an interruption from a A drunk guy who, I think he's homeless, and he's across the street. They may have been upset that the Peace Camp 2010 arrived, and it may have shined the spotlight on a situation which they were able instead to continue to sleep at until that point. And this is discussed later in the series of interviews by Curb Hugger Chris, who's one of the main activists at Peace Camp 2010, about the conflicts that can arise even within the homeless community about the civil rights struggle and its implications for people who are sort of, in, to some extent at least, if not benefiting from the status quo, at least sort of surviving under it.
Come on, man. We're trying to do something here.
This is probably
a garbage
can. But these guys love garbage.
That's a local fellow who's a little intoxicated tonight, I think. But so, sleeping ban itself is a law that you have a feeling about, a sense about, some opinions on?
Well, I believe that people should have the right to sleep. I do. But I think that overall that society has an obligation to care for its people, rich and poor, and that services, certain services, should be available or not prohibited. I mean, you know, the idea of banning sleep is kind of silly. What probably is more at issue is sanitation issues, drug issues, littering issues, those kinds of things. But we already have laws about that. And I would suggest that a sleeping ban is basically just to keep people out of town. I would probably say that.
I think the mayor would agree with you. He had a debate recently with the guy who provided the porta potty for this, and he said essentially the same thing. We can't have everybody coming to Santa Cruz, was how Mayor Mike Rodkin put it. But you also have some thoughts about how businesses who are providing services or attracting people to town should also have some facilities for those folks.
Well, yeah, I think that if you have a concession to do business, then you're instigating activity, and that activity then needs services, and that would include sanitation. And I know it's difficult at different times to find a bathroom to defecate in.
Impossible at late at night, for sure.
And so I think that it's one of those items that should be part of a planning process. When you have a business, you need to be able to have services if you're going to instigate activity in the area. If you had a
public bathroom?
Well, no. If you had a party, if you had a festival, if you had a ballpark,
provide porta potties.
You provide sanitation for the numbers of people that you're going to instigate to come. Mm-hmm. And I think that you have to be able to provide those services. Now, we have a couple of bathrooms on the mall, and that's fine. But I don't think it's enough. And I think that a lot of times people
also daytime bathrooms.
Well, and one of the complaints, and this is the fun one I think is kind of funny, is that people say, oh, well, then we got to clean them up. It's like, yeah, get to work. Like, what do you mean? Of course you have to clean them up. It's a bathroom. You have to clean up your store. You have to clean up the sidewalks. You have to clean up of course you have to clean them up. However, if you had the larger numbers of facility available, there would be less of a cleanup problem than there is, and there would probably be less of an, I might call it an anger issue in relationship to it.
Devil's advocate would say, look, there's prostitution, there's drug use, there's vandalism that happens here. We've tried this before. The bathroom, huge expenses in keeping them going. If you're so concerned about bathrooms, why don't you open one yourself, Mr.?
Well, first of all, I don't have concession on the mall or downtown. I don't have that. And I think that if you have that, if you're open for business, then it's your responsibility to do that. Now, and it's also the city's responsibility to provide certain
minimal facilities.
Minimal facilities that they take care of. And I don't think that's unreasonable, and I think that's it. Now, going back to sleeping or homelessness or jobs or, there's a lot of problems we have that need to be addressed. But, you can't make laws that, you can't just make a random law that says, something is like sleeping, something that you actually need to do. That's just not reasonable. I think that there are other laws that can be enforced.
I've always said that.
And I was against the smoking ban on the beach, and I think that that if somebody wants to smoke, that's fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not encouraging people to smoke, but they have a litter ordinance, $1,000 fine for littering. You know, and if their cigarette butt complaint was really an issue, then they would go after the litter law.
And they've extended that ban to this area here and the downtown and so forth.
And they probably should extend that ban to the liners that go through the oceans, that drop all the crap in the ocean. You know, I mean, that stuff's most of our litter. You know, there's a huge amount of litter comes off of those ocean liners.
Well, I'm glad to see some independent media here, and I'm glad, frankly, to hear your opinions because I agree with them. But it's also good to see, you know, a person who's interested in these issues. I'm sure we'll find things in which we disagree. We've been talking with
PJ Group, Fresh Ground News. Now, actually, I say that PJ Group, Fresh Ground News. I probably shouldn't say Fresh Ground News because, you know, that's my personal opinion. What I just said is my personal opinion. Those are my views.
Right.
As an individual, as a citizen, you know, as a person.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to represent that, you know, I just think that everybody has an opinion. They should voice it and they should say something. But
and you're covering, in fact, other people's opinions when you're here today.
That's correct. You know, I'm not the end all to be all to, you know, what should be right and wrong. And just, but I do have an opinion.
You certainly do. Thank you, PJ. So actually, I'm here at City Hall. It's about 6:40, and I'm looking at one of the City Council subcommittee postings in front of the closed and locked Mayor, City Council, City Manager's office, which you now need to get special check-in privileges to get past. It used to be you could walk directly in, now you can't. There's mention that...
What that means is that you used to have... You would sit in an antechamber area open to the public where you were waiting for, let's say, the city clerk. It was the area, however, through which all council members, including the mayor and vice mayor, city staff would generally pass unless they took a special back entrance. That entrance has now been locked off and is accessible only, I guess, to the privileged staff members. Instead, you have to go to an area about several hundred feet away at least, up at another entrance, walk in, and you talk to people through who are behind a glass panel. And they will then admit you through a door, which is locked, I presume, unless it's opened. And these city council members do not go through that door to come in themselves. They go in through the other door, which the public previously went through. That seems to be how it's working, although, you know, maybe I'm mistaken about it because I'm not spending a lot of time there and I haven't done a specific investigation. That is my partially supposition, but partially experience, because I've been, I was there when the earlier council offices were open and directly accessible, and both everybody used the same entrance. And now this is a more privileged, isolated, less transparent, less accessible situation.
Lynn Robinson, who's the chair of the Public Safety Committee, this is what a notice says on the board, having a special closed session meeting to review the police auditor's written evaluation and the police files. This happened on July 13th, 2010. And their next regularly scheduled meeting is September 13th at 4 p.m. So the police auditor, who's supposed to be the Citizens Police Review Board substitution or the watchdog and so forth, is apparently making reports now in closed session to the City Council instead of to the community and to the public, which is par for the course, but sad nonetheless.
It's also a change in, of course, the policy. The police auditor is the guy who supposedly oversees the Santa Cruz Police Department independently of the department. Normally, the standard practice in Santa Cruz and in other cities that don't have an independent police review board is, we used to have a somewhat independent police review board, one that could have been independent and had the potential to be independent and was beginning to be independent, but then was cut short by Mayor Riley and Matthews and Rotkin in 2003, and the rest of the city council as well at that time. And it was replaced by this police auditor, Bob Aronson, whose headquarters are, I don't know, up in Menlo Park or Palo Alto, somewhere like that. And each year he made an annual spoken report to the city council in public, but not a written report. So if you didn't hear that city council meeting, you didn't get a chance to hear what, you know, problems, if any, had come up during the year that he thought were worthy of discussing. And he gets paid tens of thousands of dollars by the city, but he doesn't make a written report to the community. And now I'm wondering if he makes a report at all, although he probably does, but it seems like he's doing a lot of secret meeting with members of the city council instead of meeting in ways that actually might involve the community and the public. But that ain't happening. The police department rules supreme. And, of course, has been expanding its power in the wake of the right-wing hysteria of around all kinds of issues like, the mythological problems of homeless people downtown, which are mainly a matter of attitude on the part of merchants who are demanding greater and greater prerogatives and privileges to clear out what they consider unsightly presences in public spaces, and ditto with community members who are somehow holding homeless people responsible for, drug wars, gang violence, stabbings, and shootings, which, of course, they're not responsible for. But they see the groups like Take Back Santa Cruz seem to see homeless people as a part of the deteriorating quality of life that has to be removed from sight and eliminated with greater policing and so forth. So the police have been given a lot greater power in recent years, a lot greater latitude, and more funding, even in the midst of a budget crisis.
So I'm talking with
Crow
and
Red.
The two of you are sitting in chairs, and yesterday those chairs were not at Peace Camp 2010 during the daytime in front of the courthouse, but you were actually seated at the intersection of Ocean and Water Streets, where there's a large stoplight, gas stations, and so forth, kind of trying to make yourself visible to the public.
Yeah, we were right next to a Republican's big giant sign on the corner there, and we basically, after we got our citation for being lodging ourselves between a rock and a hard place.
This was the previous night, the night of August 9th and 10th, that's if I got that right, I think so, at the county building when the sheriffs did another raid and gave more citations to people, lodging citations, misdemeanor tickets that have a penalty of up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. Crow and his companion Red decided to move to a more visible daytime spot to protest the city's ordinances and the county's practices regarding harassing homeless people in public spaces who simply want to sleep, or to protest the laws that criminalize sleep.
We didn't want to get arrested because we have our new puppy dog, and you know, we haven't registered her yet, but we're going to do that, all that stuff. So we moved over to the corner of Ocean Water and to fly our signs and get people aware that there's a law that keeps people from sleeping at night outside.
And what kind of response did you get?
Most of our responses were great. There was only one person that walked by who was muttering about trash, and that, and it wasn't really our trash. It was this trash that was on a lot.
Not picking it up. I have a whole grocery bag full of trash from the other people and other things. I've been there. One bag even disintegrated in my hand. It was there so long.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was complaining about the trash, but some wingnut came over and was making like an altar of trash at that corner. And then I realized he had done that, so I went and picked that crap up, you know. Most of the reaction, especially even young kids, were coming by, were looking at the sign, especially the sign that says, you know, one big earthquake and you're all homeless. They look at it, you can see that they're nodding their heads, yeah, when they're talking to each other. So it was a positive reaction, mostly.
How long were you there for?
We were there all day.
So we're talking about 8 hours at least?
Yeah, we were there all day. From
10 hours.
We were there from after we got our citation at 6 o'clock in the morning, or for whenever they woke us up, till 8 o'clock at night. And then we went back over to the courthouse.
No hassles from police, deputies, highway patrol?
No.
Police came up once.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they came up once to me and told us that we should move, but we still stayed because there's nothing they could do because we're on private property.
Yeah, they said two people called and complained. I don't know what they were complaining about. It wasn't like we're throwing eggs at cars. We're just flying our signs, you know. I mean, what do they complain about, you know?
You have the right to be on public property, too, and not move, provided you're not blocking, intentionally blocking somebody's way or, urinating on the sidewalk.
According to this lodging law, if you don't get permission by the owners, public or private, you can get a ticket for lodging.
I'd like to see them try that on a public sidewalk. It sounds like that would go down quickly. It would also be a false arrest and presumably a lawsuit.
So. Yeah, well, I think we've got a good case against the state with this lodging law, especially with the Jones decision down in L.A.
No decision is precedent anymore, but there was a settlement, and that reasoning might or might not be reconstructed by other federal courts, and it might be persuasive, you know, in a new lawsuit here in Santa Cruz, particularly since unlawful lodging is a misdemeanor, immediately punishable if you're convicted by some term in jail, whereas the sleeping ban, the city's infraction, is simply an infraction and doesn't immediately require you to go to jail if you're convicted. So
I think because we can get a jury trial with this misdemeanor, I think we'll have more of a chance to have it heard in court and have a jury decide. Maybe in our favor.
If you move to City Hall, and where you're not going to be getting misdemeanor tickets, you're going to be getting infraction tickets. What's the thought on the strategy for that?
Well, the strategy is just basically to make people aware.
Again, it's an interesting discussion. It requires perhaps a little explanation for those who haven't been privy to this kind of strategizing. Normally, you want to get as little of a penalty as possible for, doing what you have the right to do or should have the right to do anyway, sleep at night or protest the fact that you can't sleep at night peacefully by doing a demonstration, sleep out. And in the city ordinances are infractions rather than misdemeanors. Infractions are a lower, lesser form of crime. Misdemeanors are a higher form of crime punishable by up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine, whereas infractions are only punishable by fines and by community service. And indeed, in the case of the sleeping ban, the actual amount is even less because great amount of pressure from activists and city commissions and other political groups were able to force the city council to reduce the penalties for the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance back in 1999. Those penalties are still reduced. You can only have a maximum of a $97 fine. It's actually a $20 fine plus, I don't know, $77 in court costs, however ridiculous that sounds, or a maximum of 8 hours of community service per infraction sleeping ticket. And unlike every other code section in the municipal code, sleeping cannot be a misdemeanor in and of itself, no matter how many infraction tickets you get. And equally, covering up with blankets, the so-called blanket ban, the second section of the camping ordinance or camping ban, is in a similar situation, a maximum of a $97 fine. $20 plus $77 in court costs cannot be, and 8 hours of community service is the maximum amount of fine and time you can be sentenced to for violating that I covered up with blankets after 11 o'clock in the evening law. Ridiculous, of course, even to begin with, but again, the law that was created to give the police tools, as it's described in the police favorable commentary, to interrogate the people they want, drive them away, force them to submit to searches and so forth in order to protect the public safety and all that sort of thing. So, and also it's to discourage homeless people from coming to town, staying in town, being in public places, and generally believing that they have the rights that other people do, and that's a way of keeping the town pure and clean and hospitable for those with money who can come and help the local economy that way. Of course, homeless people will point out that they spend their money here as well, and that the Constitution guarantees rights for rich and poor, regardless of their economic status, at least in terms of certain basic human rights. Maybe it may not guarantee you the right to housing or the right to a job, as in some countries you are now, as I understand, at least their countries are moving in that way to make those kinds of guarantees. But at least you have the right not to be awakened at night by police shock troops demanding you just move on, regardless of where you are on public property, and giving you no place to go, but telling you you can't be here because we don't like the way you look, and we don't like what you're doing, to wit, sleeping. So the city ordinance is a more limited ordinance, and it's the law that really the most of the citations during an average month in Santa Cruz, let's say for the last few years, most citations are, if the police are going after this particular behavior, sleeping, are for sleeping ban, blanket ban, or camping ban, all from the municipal code 6.36. However, when the protesters began protesting in front of the county building, which was done not to evade this law, but to actually focus attention on the courts, which had just left one particular sleeper, Robert Blind Bear Facer, a musician, 63-year-old guy, who was convicted of sleeping, even though there was no shelter on that night, and that was agreed by all parties, but nonetheless the judge, Commissioner Baskett, convicted him anyway. That case was being appealed, and the appeal was suddenly delayed for 3 months, and this upset Facer's attorney, Ed Fry, and Ed felt that that kind of delay was intolerable, and what he wanted to do was protest the court's decision, and so he, with the help of Paul Lee, who helped to fund the porta potty that Ed Fry was able to rent, began, along with myself, Becky Johnson, and a number of other people, a sleepout in front of the county government building, the court building. And we were there. I was only there for the first few days, except I came down regularly and did a lot of audio work and have been kind of passing on the story and trying to be helpful in different ways. Homeless people took over this whole procedure. They recognized its merit, and more important than even a protest, it was a safe place to sleep because the county decided that it didn't want to go in and give people a lot of tickets as long as there was no real public health and safety problem. And the city police also decided they didn't want to deal with it because it was on county property, and they had come to some decision with the county some years before that although perhaps they may have been giving out tickets in the past on that property, they didn't want to do it now at this time unless they were specifically called in by the sheriffs. Well, the sheriffs never called them in, but instead, after about a month, because of a decision handed down by an unknown bureaucrat somewhere, and I couldn't get the details from Lieutenant Plageman of where this actually happened and how it happened and who made that decision, around August 1st, the decision was made to start giving out citations. But if the county gave out citations not for the city's sleeping ban law, maybe they felt they couldn't do it, or maybe they wanted to have a sort of a stronger club. They used instead, and perhaps they're just using a law they used before, because they have used this law before, rarely, against homeless people. I know of one particular case, Jesus Santos, who's a long-haired, long-bearded homeless guy who lived up in the boonies, and police raided his camp and ticketed him with this law, which is the so-called unlawful lodging law, 647E, of the state penal code. And this is a law which provides up to, as I said, a $1,000 fine and a year in jail if you are convicted. And the point with this law is that it also provides you and allows you to have, in fact, it requires the court to give you a jury trial, the right to impanel 12 jurors who have to unanimously decide you're guilty. If they don't unanimously decide that, then the district attorney has to decide whether to drop the charge or to retry it with another jury. And these are an expensive process for the county and a time-consuming one for the courts. It was estimated about 10 or 15 years ago it cost $10,000 to $20,000 per jury trial. I expect it's probably a lot more now, but I don't have an exact figure. But it costs money to do it. It costs time. Usually, I mean, almost 90, 95% of cases now are settled out of court by essentially public defenders or public pretenders, as some of us like to call them. Supposedly, these are attorneys supposedly that are appointed by the court to help you. They essentially persuade you to take a dive, do a plea bargain, accept a deal of a limited or lesser charge instead of going to trial on the original charge and maybe winning and maybe losing. I don't have any stats on how many cases are won versus how many cases are lost. That would be an important and interesting stat to have here in Santa Cruz. But often, I have found in the past, as an activist, the threat of taking a case to trial, that is, if an activist is willing to say, I'm not going to stop short of trial, and if you arrest me, we're going to go to a second trial, and all my friends who get arrested are also going to go to trial, this will essentially stop the process at some point where they'll arrest you, they'll put you in jail, you'll have to get bailed out, or in my case, I don't believe in getting bailed out because it's just too expensive for everybody involved and also unfair. Some would get bailed and some wouldn't. You just usually get OR'd or released on your own recognizance and you're promised to appear in court when you sign a little statement to that effect. But once that you get out of there and you go back to what you're doing, often the authorities simply don't file the charges. So, for instance, in the famous mock Nazi salute case that I was involved with and am involved with and is now before the Ninth Circuit en banc panel, when I was essentially arrested at city council for making a silent, fleeting gesture in protest of an abusive decision by the chair, the mayor of the city council back in 2002, and then was arrested because I refused to leave. That situation was never taken to court. And instead I sued the city, and this lawsuit has been going on for 8 years. But that can happen with these cases, too. I mean, if they are arresting people for sleeping or so-called lodging laws and then not taking them to trial, and they don't have any probable cause to arrest people because they know there's no shelter that night, and they do, they've been told, then they are engaging in cruel and unusual punishment. Now, courts have not generally found that the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment, the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, which the federal Constitution guarantees us, is generally applicable prior to conviction of a crime. And, of course, since they've dropped the charges, there's not going to be a trial, and so there won't be any conviction. But in the famous Jones case in Southern California in 2006, coming out of Los Angeles, where a lot of people, well, a lot of homeless people were getting harassed and arrested by the LAPD under a thou shalt not sit, lie, or sleep law on public sidewalks, there was a 2-to-1 finding in a federal court of appeals that extended over the entire 9-state region, which includes California, Oregon, Washington, Hawaii, and so forth, all the western states, that it is cruel and unusual punishment to arrest someone for sleeping when there's no shelter space, or when, you know, it's reasonable to believe that there's unlikely to be shelter space for people, and it's unreasonable to expect them to go to shelter, to look for shelter, and then have to go get a piece of paper that says there isn't shelter, and then to go defend themselves in court later. And that resulted in a settlement in Los Angeles called the Jones Settlement, although when it was settled, the case, the precedent became moot, and whether it was simply depublished or simply dissolved, there's no more, you can't rely on that precedent. But it was a procedure the courts went through, and it is an ever-present threat for city councils, city attorneys, police departments who want to keep this practice on their books, which the Santa Cruz police have kept, and which City Attorney of Santa Cruz, John Barisoni, has kept doing, and which the Santa Cruz City Council under Mike Rotkin continues to support, which is ticketing people during a time when they know there is no legal shelter for them. And the same is being done, or was being done during the protest by the county sheriffs, somewhat, I think, to their chagrin. They actually expressed sympathy privately for us, and they kind of almost apologetically were giving us citations. I didn't get a citation, or I haven't gotten one yet, but I'm likely to get one in the days ahead, I suspect. Many people got citations. I think there were 9 arrests, most of which involved this unlawful lodging law at the county building. And then there were 24 unlawful lodging citations. I think there were a few more than that. So it's actually a total of about 30-odd unlawful lodging trials if everybody went to trial. Now, it's not likely that everybody would go to trial because some of those folks sort of just disappeared into the boonies. But it does create a difficult situation for the courts and for the sheriffs and for authorities because, unlike in the city, and this again is sort of the legal situation is interesting and perhaps a little complex. In the city, if you get an infraction and you don't go to court, let's say you're sitting on the sidewalk or you sleep after 11 o'clock at night illegally, because everywhere is illegal in Santa Cruz, but the police decide to ticket you for it, If you ignore that ticket, it doesn't go to what's called failure to appear warrant. Instead, it goes south for what's called collection after a couple months, where they add a $300 fee and it's a civil collection agency. It can, as I understand, impact your credit, can impact your driver's license, but it doesn't result in your being arrested. Now, what that means is that some people have been taking infractions, tickets, particularly those they regard as unjust and absurd, like these sleeping ban tickets, and using them for toilet paper, in essence throwing them away, saying this is ridiculous. However, City Council has passed new laws which make doing that, that is to say, ignoring your tickets, after the third ticket, if you ignore three tickets that are infraction tickets in the city of Santa Cruz, this is a law they passed a year and a half ago, they can then charge you with a new crime, a misdemeanor of ignoring three infractions. And at least one person was charged with this and convicted of it, although I think he did a plea bargain. His name is Melvin Smith, or Melvin Jones, actually. I don't know the guy, but that's what I was reading in the paper. And that can be punishable by up to 6 months or a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. It's a misdemeanor. More recently, the Santa Cruz City Council has passed another ordinance which says that not only can they cook up this misdemeanor crime for three infractions that you ignore, three infraction tickets, but they can also regard every infraction after that third ignored infraction as a misdemeanor, without even calling it a new crime, without even establishing a new crime. So that means your fourth ticket, whatever it is, if you've gotten three infraction tickets that you have not gone to court on for whatever reason, maybe you on principle you said no, maybe you didn't have time or energy, maybe all kinds of reasons why you wouldn't get to court. Homeless people have better things to do than go to court. Most of us do generally, but they do particularly because they spend so much of their time trying to get from one place to another and retrieve their property and find a place to sleep and find a place to get to eat and so forth. Then that fourth ticket, if you get a fourth ticket, no matter where it is, the city attorney can choose to make it a misdemeanor. And that law goes into effect probably in the next few days. And that doesn't mean you'll immediately start getting misdemeanors, because you have to have ignored three infraction tickets, I think, starting after the date the law goes into effect, although I'm not quite clear on that. But the point here is that in the city, sleeping ban citations are normally are more minor crimes than, let's say, unlawful lodging citations are if you're getting it from the sheriffs in the county. And so the protesters who were getting these unlawful lodging tickets were getting heavier penalties and heavier tickets, but they were getting the choice of a jury trial and a public defender. And they were also getting the choice, the greater prospect of legal help down the road, because arresting someone and taking them to jail and also threatening them with a potential long jail sentence for the crime of sleeping when the authorities know there's no legal place for them to sleep is a greater violation of civil liberties than just writing them a citation and threatening them with a fine. That's something that the courts might be more concerned about, the higher courts, not the local courts, which are kind of in bed with the mayor and in bed with the sheriff's department and in bed with the police, so to speak. So that being the case, still, Peace Camp 2010 moved from the county building night before last to the city hall area. And that meant even though they were going to be dealing with, they're going to be getting citations that they wouldn't get a trial for, and at least not a jury trial, they wouldn't get a public defender appointed for, and they'll be facing probably harsher treatment from the Santa Cruz City Police, because Mayor Rotkin was making a lot of threats and denouncing the sheriffs for not moving on this unsightly encampment and going on about that. It's the kind of terms you would not expect to hear from a truly progressive mayor or a city council member about homeless people in a city that has utterly inadequate facilities for shelter at night. So that is going to be an interesting issue as this Peace Camp 2010 at its new location goes into its third night at City Hall. It actually, it's a second and a half night, because it got there at 3 in the morning and only one person was ticketed. But let's say it, just call it its third night. And let's hear again more tape more audio from the August 11th morning. That's yesterday morning, after their first night there at the City Hall.
That there is a law. A lot of people sometimes don't know that there's a law where you can't sleep outside or you'll get a ticket.
And again, to remind you, this is Crow, who is one of the main protesters there, who's describing how he, the day before, had been sitting out and doing a kind of informing people with signs at the corner of Ocean and Water Streets. Now he is posted at the Peace Camp 2010 right across from the main library in front of City Hall with Red and their little pooch. Red is his female partner, and the pooch is the pooch.
Or arrested. You mean the city's code, as well as the state code on unlawful lodging.
Yes, exactly. You know, and people don't realize, because, you know, they're not homeless, that people are harassed by the police on a constant basis and don't really have a place to go. They don't supply shelter. They don't have enough shelter to supply for the people out here.
Yeah, they only have 8 beds for women and 8 beds for men. Now, where are all these other people going to go?
I understand if they don't have any beds tonight, there's a waiting list. You can't get on.
That's
if you
right.
wanted to go there tonight, you couldn't.
But, in fact, if you wanted to look at the number of beds that are occupied, because people have been on waiting lists and gotten into those beds, I believe the testimony in court today was that there were, I think, a total of 48 beds, 32 for men and, 16 for women, something like that. That's at the Paul Lee Loft at the Homeless Services Center. And then there were a smaller number of other beds at the Jesus, Mary, and Joseph shelter and the Pajaro Valley shelter in the South County. But a minuscule number of beds, or a very small number of beds compared to the number of people, and no shelter spaces really open or available in general for people walking in during the late spring, summer, and early fall months when the armory is closed. The armory is used as a winter shelter and has 100 beds.
That's right.
I think it's 40-some beds on the Paul Lee Loft on a sign-up list. Where do you get this 8 figure from, Red?
That's how they told me that was how many bunks they had for women. One of the women that was upstairs told me.
Oh, because I got, whatever the number.
We're talking about the shelter, right?
I'm talking about the Homeless Service Center's Paul Lee Loft shelter.
Well, personally, I particularly wouldn't sleep in that fucking place anyway.
And why do you use such strong language regarding our Homeless Service Center shelter-provided beds?
There's quite a bit of people over there that work there that I don't like. Their attitudes are really horrible towards other people. I have been accused over there of things that I never did. You know, and I'm not really particularly care for that whole organization. I mean, yeah, they feed people and everything, but they do it with such disgruntledness. I could care less about what they do over there, you know. Even if they shut it down, I could care less, because I don't particularly need their services, really.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz struggling on this issue?
Oh, ever since I got here.
What year?
I think it was 91, 92. I mean, I've been working in Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, you know, Berkeley, Peace Park, wherever.
People's Park.
People's Park. And, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. Ever since the Gulf War, I got involved with Proposition 1, Nuclear Disarmament Initiative, with the people and the peace protest in front of the White House when George Bush Sr. was president. And there was camping issues then, you know, and people getting arrested for sleeping and beating drums and so forth and so on. And then when I came here, I met you and Wonton Dave and got involved right away here once we got here.
Wonton Dave Jacobs was a very strong, legalistically minded vet who set up a camp at the town clock in 1991 at the Gulf War, protesting the war and then protesting the police treatment of homeless people. And he actually got dozens and dozens of tickets, all of them for nonviolent activity, all of them for sleeping. And he beat almost every one of them in terms of he was charged, I think, ultimately with 12 different misdemeanors, public nuisance was the main charge, somewhat similar to what Ana Richardson and Miguel de Leon are facing and faced in their civil permanent injunction hearing slash trial today in Department 4, about which I'll talk in a bit. Jacobs was quite a famous figure. He wore a bathrobe, a kind of a scarlet bathrobe around town. He's a grizzled fellow with a big beard. He was outspoken and knowledgeable in the law, and he left town in the mid-90s, and I haven't seen him since.
A long time sleep criminal, in other words.
Yes, I know. Okay. And you're getting grayer, and so am I.
I'm white, you're gray.
I know.
We've been talking with?
Crow.
And?
Red.
Thanks.
All right.
We're talking with a too much interviewed
Kerbugger Chris. I got no voice left.
And you're actually standing here as the dusk, the dawn is broken. It's around 7. And a man came by earlier. We can hear him on the tape, who's ranting and raving about this. You aren't homeless. Why don't you go home? Why don't you get out of here? I thought his name was Steve, but you think it's Michael?
He said his name was Michael, so I assume it's Michael.
Not sure, but he was, of course, drunk. But
he was drunk.
Yes, he was drunk. But, you know, he had a drunken companion who was also a little more sociable. But you were mentioning, Chris, and we've seen people kind of sleeping across the street.
Everyone here,
right up against the library. And
well, sure. The library is a regular spot. It's been for years people have been sleeping on and around the library with more or less being left alone. I mean, they do get rousted on a fairly regular basis, but they also get quite a few nights sleep in doing it. So, and I think that they're going to be upset. We're blowing up the spot. There's no doubt about it. We're right across the street, and they're going to lose their sleeping spot. They'll almost certainly be ticketed along with us or told to move along, one of the two. And I think there's going to be some angst. I also think that a lot of the homeless population are not particularly in favor of our protest. They've made themselves known vocally. I think a lot of them are simply parroting the city and their complaints. I don't think they really understand what they're complaining against or who they're complaining against. I think others have legitimate gripes in their own mind, at least. I think a lot of the veterans who've spoken out against us are not particularly happy with, to be honest, with your involvement in this. You're not a big.
I've blown it again.
You're not a big fan among the veterans. So I think that they've taken that to heart and have sort of gone against this movement. But you know what? Every protest worth its salt has a counter.
I've got a number of friends among the veterans.
Well, I'm good. I'm glad. I understand.
And they
regularly come on my show. I understand the veterans.
It's okay. Veterans, everybody can't be loved by every demographic. But my point is simply that, you know, every protest worth its salt is going to have a counter protest. If people are not angry at us, then we're doing something wrong here. And so that's going to be part and parcel. And I think now that we brought it to the downtown area, I think we're going to see a lot more of it. So we're prepared.
Thank you, Chris.
You're very well.
Sleep well.
Thank you.
It is about 8:15, or I should say 7:55, and the same dowdy group of protesters is here. Jeff, Red, Crow, Oscar is also here, the sole African-American in this protest at the moment. Richard, Becky, Coral, Orbit, and of course Kerbucker Chris. They're going through their second round of coffee and cocoa. Had the first, or actually the second city employee of the day, maybe more actually, passing by. I think Rosemary Baisley passed by, city clerk's office, and also Mia Duquette, who we'll see how they begin to respond in days ahead.
This was the first morning that Peace Camp 2010 appeared at City Hall. And again, this was yesterday in the morning about 7 o'clock.
So I got the word from Kerbucker Chris, at least his account of his arrest the other day, said there was a much different treatment by the deputies on his second arrest. Second arrest, apparently, he was his loosely handcuffed, if handcuffed at all, from the front. He was greeted by a doctor and a nurse when he arrived. He was given a full breakfast, and he was sent an
put in a warm room as well. Yeah. Some of this is mentioned in the story that is up on Peace Camp 2010 about the, I guess it was the Saturday evening, Sunday morning arrests, but some of it is not. So check out peacecamp2010.blogspot.com. So I'm here at Peace Camp 2010, and listen to what he's saying. I'm recording you. I'm recording you, man.
You're on tape.
And what's happening here is the same intoxicated guy who is upset with the arrival of activists is denouncing me and actually getting rather threatening. And then when Kerbucker Chris sort of announced from across the street that he'd called 911, the man's posture immediately changed. He said, "Oh no, I'm not doing anything." Walked off and he backed away. This is a guy. I'm not trying to say. I mean, I think people who are violent and threatening, regardless of whether they're homeless or housed, you know, you need to defend yourself when this kind of thing happens, and it does happen occasionally. But interestingly enough, this guy came upon me later in the day, and he was again threatening us. There was a woman I was with took his picture, and he got very upset that his picture was taken. But I think she was taking his picture in self-defense because he was being so threatening. But when I mentioned, you know, that it would be great if we could, you know, if he could be gotten a job, his whole posture changed, and he became very interested in, you know, can you help me get a job? And I said, you know, probably not. But I mean, if the guy was a carpenter, you know, he's out of work, he's obviously got an alcohol problem. It was an interesting kind of touching situation that comes up, you know, I don't know. Anyway.
You're on tape. Yeah, shrug your shoulder. Brothers, but watch your mouth, okay?
Stand by. Are these guys part of your group?
No, they're not.
They're really making a mess.
I just got here. Yeah, they're not. They're just individuals who are perhaps homeless. I don't know. So, yeah.
What I'm talking about here is, that first morning, yesterday morning, after Peace Camp 2010 arrived, a couple of other folks who previously were not involved with Peace Camp 2010 began sprawling on the lawn and sort of spreading their stuff out. And it's interesting. Previous protests have tried to, regiment how people on the periphery behave who aren't even a part of Peace Camp 2010 or a part of their previous protests, which were called different things, or about the sleeping ban. But the issue really is, you know, it's not really the prerogative of people who are in a protest to demand those who are not or who are nearby and who are trying to survive as homeless people and doing what they're doing, for whatever reason, to start laying down rules for them. And indeed, one of the strengths of Peace Camp 2010 has been that it has been able to deal with people who are sometimes angry, sometimes violent, get into fights with each other, in a kind of an interesting way, a form of psychic jujitsu, a form of not trying to impose rules on anybody, but also not tolerating any kind of threats at a certain point. And it's seemed to have worked pretty well.
I'm not sure everybody is. And again, I'm kind of more of a support person than I'm a, person who's here most of the time. These guys said they wanted some chairs and a table. So
okay.
All right.
Right there.
Okay. So about 12 o'clock, I'm here with Channel 8 News.
All right, Robert. Just turn your body face a little more, please. Say your first and last name, please.
Robert Norris.
And your title?
Oh, supporter, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom of the Peace Camp 2010.
Okay. So are you then a part of the move from the county building to City Hall?
Well, I heard it was happening, and I came over to support it, and I thought it was a different move for sure.
What do you think you might be able to accomplish this time that you weren't able to accomplish the last time that you had set up here?
Well, you may remember Mayor Rotkin challenged the group by wondering why they were at the county building when the city law was the main law being used against homeless people to, in the absence of shelter in Santa Cruz, make them criminals at night for sleeping.
and force them into unsafe places. And so this is the center of city government, so presumably this is the place to go.
We came from the county building. There were county employees cleaning up, I guess, a mess that was left behind there. The sculpture's been shipped. There's graffiti. Mm-hmm. You know, do you think you're going to be able to police these people a little better, maybe?
Well, again, I'm not in any way in charge of anything that's happening. I don't represent homeless people. I didn't start this protest, although I was one of the original supporters of it, and still am. One has to consider whether harassing people at night for sleeping throughout the city versus chipping a statue and a few graffiti are equivalent activities. I think in any protest you may find some problems developing, and they were there for a month after all.
Now, interestingly enough, you're going to shortly hear a curb hugger, Chris, talk about the same issue. What I said was played, apparently, on Channel 8 News. What Chris said, which is much more detailed and discusses, he denies the fact that there was any graffiti. He says instead it was erasable chalk, and he said the chipped statue happened beforehand and that they were very, very careful in dealing with the property there. And I thought generally that was the case, though, you know, when a significant number of people there are sleeping overnight and storing their possessions there during the day, it does look, it can look very messy, although every day I noticed it was cleaned up. So the people going to and from the court, though there were occasionally people in sleeping bags there, didn't have to, you know, walk over debris or anything of that sort. I found it, you know, unusually clean for a homeless protest, but there was still a lot of stuff. I also said, I mean, I think I've said earlier, I was involved with the origins of this protest. I'm a supporter of the protest. I slept out there the first few nights, and it may be fair to say I helped start the protest. It was then, you know, taken over by people who were homeless themselves and therefore really had a greater, not just credibility, but need. And it was really important that they do this themselves if that's what they wanted to do. And that is indeed what's happening, because they're the people whose rights are being affected and whose livelihood and whose lives are being affected too. Their right to, you know, to survive, their right to have the kind of basic human dignity that other people have is tied up in things like the right to sleep, the right to use public spaces, and the importance of standing up for those rights, which often can only be done if there's solidarity within the group of people who are fighting to establish those rights, whether it's women or African Americans or Hispanics or Japanese Americans or disabled people or elderly or, you know, gay, bi, transgender, whatever people. You know, it requires solidarity within that group, and this kind of growing solidarity is a very important thing.
If you focus on that rather than what the police are doing every night, I think you're doing the community a disservice, and I hope the media looks at those issues, which are really the important ones, which is you have poor and disabled people who have no shelter. If you contact the Homeless Services Center today, you'll find there is no bed tonight for this man, for example. And yet he faces sleeping tickets if he wants to visibly show that this is a real problem in Santa Cruz. And as you know, you've been around for decades, they don't address this problem. Instead, they send in the police. So.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
You know where Chris is? Or
he's being interviewed by Channel 8 Action News.
Have to debunk that exact issue. So it backfired in their face, and we decided to lock up our wheels. We took 9 arrests.
This is curb hugger Chris being interviewed again by Phil Gomez of Channel 8 News yesterday around noon.
I believe 24 citations were issued, and we're going to fight those charges if the county insists upon prosecuting them, which we sincerely hope they won't. Now that we've retired, I actually had a powwow. I walked into the tunnel beneath the courthouse with a white flag on a stick, believe it or not. And we had a negotiation last night. We negotiated a ceasefire for last night so that we could retrieve our belongings and make the move over here in peace. The lieutenant thanked me for our cooperation. Most of everybody went peacefully. There was a lot of yelling and shouting, but for the most part, it was a peaceable thing, even during the arrest phase of what went on over there. We thank them for their professionalism. We thank them for handling themselves like gentlemen. We thank the county for their hospitality. We have proven our point, and now we're taking our fight home to where it belongs, right here at City Hall.
How is this camp out going to be different from the previous one that was held a few years ago?
A few years ago?
Yeah.
Well, for one thing, I think the eyes of the world have been a lot longer on Peace Camp 2010. Right from beginning, from day one, we've got you folks lining the entire front of City Hall. That's sort of unprecedented. The momentum that's behind Peace Camp 2010, we've reached out to the entire globe, to the world, and they've responded. From all over the world, we're getting emails right now. I'm working my way through the email box in an RV right across the street as fast as I can, the messages that are coming in. So I think we're really bringing this as a human rights issue, as an issue of in great importance to these people. These are people, and Phil, I think you witnessed it on the Cobbles with Diane and some of the elderly people you got to meet and the disabled people. This is a life or death situation, and I think people are starting to realize that, and this is our chance. I think it's just a matter of good timing and an issue that's finally coming to the fore.
Now, when you originally started at the county building, you were planning on just going from 11 or 8 o'clock until
right.
8 the next day,
right.
And then it turned into an all-day vigil.
Right.
Is that the plan here?
Obviously, the plan's going to be different here. We have a completely different environment here, a completely different setting, a completely different set of rules. Our plan here is during the exact hours that are called for in the sleeping ban, we will be sleeping. We will be in bedrolls with a minimal amount of belongings. Crow and his old lady over here being the exception. They travel with their own kit on bicycle, trailer bicycles. But for the most part, we're going to try to keep people slimmed down in their bags and asleep during those hours and ready to get the tickets. During the day, we will have a presence a lot like what you're going to film over here up against the wall. We're completely legal. We're going to do some political tabling. We're going to hand out some literature, and we're going to allow people to get to know some of the folks. And we're going to try to stay right within this concrete plaza here, and we'll try to do no damage to the environment whatsoever.
Speaking of the environment, we were out there earlier at the county building, and there were workers scrub brushing and cleaning up graffiti. There was a sculpture that was chipped.
The graffiti, I think, was chalk, I believe, on the sidewalks, just so we're clear, and it comes up pretty easily. The chips to the statue were there when we got here. We don't know how they got there, but that piece of art has been very well respected. It was in the exact position that it was left in, even though it is not mounted at all on that thing. And we know nothing about the damage to it, but it's an easily damageable thing, and it was already damaged like that when we got there. So.
All right, very good. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So it's about 15 to 1. I'm at the public library, outside sitting area, right across from Peace Camp 2010, and I'm talking to a...
Ah, yes, and this was an interview which we have to call it a lost interview. It really was quite a good interview. A very articulate woman talked about being homeless in Santa Cruz, and the problems that she encountered in getting shelter and so forth. But she became concerned that she hadn't put it as well as she should, and she asked me to record over the entire interview, and I did so at her request. And so that we don't have that interview. What we're going to have instead, briefly, is a little song here while we're queuing up.
If anywhere looking out over the ocean, a cloud reflection appears mirrored as sea foam. Gathering and bound like rolling thunder, crashing waves make a sound that is all their own. Could be while seeking out a sunrise, even stranded, you might have been there too. Magically mist turned into vapor, drew me in and carried me off such a rhythmic hill. Heartbeat of the world, a rocking motion, mesmerized by a strong pulse lapping shore. Wonder if there's any need for rescue from monsters hidden beneath the surface floor. At once a force both coming yet awesome, mystical sea, big deep and blue.
And that's a number from Evie McKnight's Pirate's Cove. And it's one of a number of selections. I'm not sure which one it is. Another street performer I ran across. You're tuned to the stream of Freak Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org. This is the August 12th, 2010 show. And you may be listening to it later. It may be replayed. Who knows? A lot of information, or at least a lot of interviews, coming out around Peace Camp 2010's first few days at first few nights at City Hall. We're going to be going back to that. But I want to go through a couple of other items. I recently sent an email to council member and former mayor Catherine Byers, who's on the city council, and made some requests. I concerned about the costs and inconvenience of getting copies, which is 25 cents a page now, used to be 10 cents a page, and the cost of getting a DVD of, let's say, city council meetings, in case you want to get one. It's cheap. It's only a dollar, but you have to actually go to the offices twice because they're afraid you're not going to give them the dollar. You have to pay in advance, and that's unlike other city offices, and I was concerned about that because it seemed to be a particularly discriminatory treatment, so I asked Catherine Byers to look into it. She said she would, but she claimed there was some authority. So they'd done a study as to how much it costs to get documents out, and at 25 cents a page is a reasonable price. I said, good, give me a copy of the study, which she hasn't done yet. She's gone away on vacation for a month. Apparently, so has Mayor Mike Rutkin. These council members all like to go on vacation around this time of year. Many of them do. At the same time, homeless people are getting arrested for sleeping. They get to go on vacation. I guess they say life isn't fair. I asked her to request an opinion of the city attorney as to whether the new law that was passed, which makes every fourth infraction, that if you didn't take care of the first three infraction tickets, a misdemeanor at the preference of the city attorney. Does that mean that the earlier law that said a sleeping ban violation can never be a misdemeanor is now overturned? And she apparently didn't know whether that was true or not, but she voted for this crazy law about a month ago, twice, in two separate council sessions. So it's either she didn't give a damn, or she had some idea that it maybe didn't have that effect. But in any case, she hadn't asked the city attorney yet what the story was, but I requested her to do so. I also asked her, well, maybe you've changed your opinion on the sleeping ban. You originally came into power throughout the 90s. You were an opponent of the sleeping ban. Then when you got a majority on the city council, you backed away from eliminating it. But you did make some minor changes, which reduced it from a misdemeanor to an infraction. Now it seems you're okay with having the sleeping ban being a misdemeanor again. Her response was, she still wanted to see people have shelter somewhere, but she opposed any changes in the sleeping ban. Again, not really clarifying whether she obviously supported making the a sleeping ban a misdemeanor on the fourth infraction ticket. That doesn't mean four sleeping ban tickets. It means four tickets of any kind whatsoever that you haven't attended in court. The fourth one becomes a misdemeanor. So apparently she does support that. she has become harsher on that issue, or she's buckling under to right-wing pressure from downtown neighbors, Santa Cruz neighbors, Take Back Santa Cruz, the conservative, Martine Bernal's conservative city staff. Martine Bernal is the new, really the top honcho in Santa Cruz, the city manager, who has the most expensive and most powerful position in the city. I asked about the decrease in space on the public sidewalks because of the new penguin statues and other decreases because of directories and trash bins being put in the forbidden zones around a 14-foot radius where you can't sit down on the sidewalk. What's the status, I asked, of what's the status of benches that are being taken out, benches that are being removed without a public process, usually at the behest of some merchant who doesn't like people gathering in front of his store at a bench and somehow feels that she or he has the right to remove a public facility in order to accommodate their private business without any kind of public hearing, just by, you know, greasing the staff, the public, you know, schmoozing the staff and getting it done behind the scenes. And then when we ask for the documents, suddenly there are no documents. And Byers, former Mayor Byers, confirmed that she herself had found that when she asked the head of Parks and Rec, the superintendent of Parks and Rec, right under Danette Shoemaker, the head superintendent's name is Steve Hammack, you know, what happened to the benches, he said, I have no idea, and there's no paper trail. We can't find out, which sounds very strange to me and continues to sound very strange. I'd like to see us do a little walking to the Parks and Rec Department and sitting down in their offices in search of the benches. Maybe they can find the documents that seem to have been mislaid or shredded, recreate those documents. This is a long email I sent her requesting also that she meet with Peace Camp 2010. She said she was willing to, but that would be after she got back in mid-September, assuming Peace Camp 2010 is still together. And in essence, she had really nothing to say. I guess that's really the upshot as I look through all these questions I asked. I think I may be posting this on IndieBay later to... I probably should have asked her to put this into an email where we can actually get her, have her, you know, her responses can actually be seen instead of conveyed secondhand from me. For those who are interested, by the way, in following up, you can get a hold of Catherine Byers. She does receive calls at her home. Her number's in the phone book, although she's going to be out of town. And Byers is spelled B-E-I-E-R-S, B-E-I-E-R-S, and I think it's 426-6108. Is her phone number. I believe council members have a responsibility to be on call, particularly during business hours. I don't know about at night like now, but that's her number to call her at some point if you'd like to get in touch or leave a message with her. Or you can call the general city council number 420-5020. Where the hell are the disappearing benches? Why are costs raising for public documents? Why are you supporting laws that criminalize homeless people at night? Well, I also asked her to provide a statement from the Homeless Services Center, because she's on the board of directors. She's a member of city council. She's a former mayor, but she's also on the board of directors of the Homeless Services Center. I asked her to get in touch with Monica Martinez, the new executive director, and ask her to direct Daniel Smith, I think his name is, this guy who testified in court today that there was no shelter for people in the Paul Lee Loft, except that you could put yourself on a waiting list, and maybe in 4 to 6 weeks you could get a shelter bed if it came available out of the 48 beds there, for a homeless total that I estimate at 1,500 to 2,000, but that was estimated in court today at a much lower number, but still a much higher number than the number of beds, around 500 unsheltered people outside all the services and all the shelter situations that exist in Santa Cruz. So I asked Catherine Byers to direct, or to try to get the board to direct the Homeless Services Center director to give a letter to homeless people and to Peace Camp 2010 people saying, we have no shelter starting in April 15th until November 15th when the armory opens, and then we might have some shelter. But so far she hasn't returned my call. She hasn't returned Ed Fry's call. I guess actually she did talk to Ed Fry. Her claim to Ed Fry, as he said to me this morning, was, well, we can't tell you the number of shelter beds or whether there'll be no shelter available because there are other shelters in the Homeless Service Center. And while that's technically true, the other shelters are very specialized shelters for particular groups, families, people willing to go in drug programs, the mentally ill. And I suggested to Ed, and I think he's going to, Ed Fry is the one of the people who started this protest and who supplies the porta potty and is an attorney defending several homeless people, that he write back to Monica Martinez, executive director of the Homeless Service Center, saying, well, that's fine. Just tell us that your shelter, the Homeless Service Center, is full and has been full since the 15th and will be full until the 15th of April and will be full until November 15th. With that letter sitting on people's sleeping bags, it becomes even more egregious when police give tickets because they can see and read that letter and they are then informed what they are doing, in essence, is clearly a form of harassment, cruel and unusual punishment, and unconstitutional behavior. And if they arrest people, it's even worse. So we'll see if we can get Monica to do that. I kind of doubt it because I read today in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which I like to call the Urinal, an editorial from Don Miller. Don Miller is the editor of the Sentinel, and he wrote an editorial called Snooze, You Lose in Santa Cruz. Ha, ha, ha. What a funny little phrase. We actually use that as a placard indicating how stupid the sleeping ban was and how kind of what a nasty trick it was on the homeless. But this is an editorial that Miller wrote, and you can read it online. It's available, and I wrote a response to it. But he is claiming that, we agree with Santa Cruz City Councilman Don Lane, he writes, who has long worked to support shelter services for the homeless, that people sometimes fail to make the distinction between protesters and transients, and those who by circumstances or health and find themselves without shelter and need help. We do hope protest supporters read Thursday's Sentinel report, which quoted Monica Martinez, executive director of the Homeless Services Center, who noted there were no shelter beds available the day she was interviewed, but only five people had signed up to be placed on a waiting list. Every Monday, she said, beds open up for those who need shelter, and the people who really want a bed will almost always get one relatively quickly. Well, in court today, her underling, Daniel Smith, who runs the shelter program, she's the executive director of the entire Homeless Services Center. He runs, I guess, the shelter program aspect of it, said that there's a waiting list that would require a wait on an average 4 to 6 weeks. So I wrote back to Miller the following letter. Oh, Miller said, if the camping ban protesters need a place to sleep, the center is located at 115 Coral Street in Santa Cruz's Harvey West area, and the phone number is 831-316-5000, which is a different number than the one I have. It's kind of interesting. Maybe I should try that number, too. I left a message, and my phone call hasn't yet been returned. My response to that was, Don, you might want to inquire a little more deeply about shelter availability at the Homeless Services Center. At the injunction trial today of Ivana Richardson and Miguel de Leon in Judge Volkman's Department 4, Homeless Service Center's Daniel White, that's not Daniel Smith, it was Daniel White, my apologies to Daniel, shelter manager for the Homeless Services Center, gave testimony under penalty of perjury. He testified under oath exactly what he told us a week ago when we tried to get a bed for Peace Camp 20 homeless activist, it's 2010, Timothy Smith, who's also known as Orbit, who was told there were no beds. We were further advised that there has been no walk-in shelter available since April 15th. None will be available until November 15th, waiting list time 4 to 6 weeks. Strangely enough, Daniel wouldn't put that statement on paper to pass on to your friends, the police, when they come with flashlights and ticket books at midnight to ticket people for sleeping who have no shelter. The Paul Lee Loft has less than 48 beds. Paul Brindell is the shelter project director at the Community Action Board, regularly involved in charting homeless population and homeless shelter, as well as trying to provide shelter. He testified that there were at least 450 unsheltered homeless people at the last census count. My estimate is much higher. That's after adding in all the shelter at other North County shelters other than the HSC. So it looks like HSC Executive Director Monica Martinez's suggestion is wildly optimistic. But maybe we can test it out We can all test it out by trooping down there on Monday, hopefully with you there, a notebook in hand to see things firsthand. Let me know if you'd agree to do that, and I think we can meet you down there on Monday. In the meantime, perhaps you can ask your buddies in blue to lay off the harassment so people can sleep at night until then. Yes, Virginia, there really is no shelter in Santa Cruz for the overwhelming majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz. For you not to know that after decades of sentinel writing makes you either incredibly ignorant, willfully blind, or most likely terminally prejudiced. It may be unwise to offend the local paper of record, but the Sentinel's long-standing sewer gusher of misinformation feeds the bigotry of those in the community who rely on it for even vaguely accurate information. The Sentinel's knee-jerk police support also backs up politicians who cater to that bigotry and repeatedly issue misinformation that demeans and vilifies homeless people. Apologies and some real investigative journalism would be in order there, Don. That was my response. You can find it in, if you go online, today's Sentinel. It's replete with numerous typos. My apologies for those reading it. I say at least five typos in there. I have a lot of trouble proofreading my own stuff. Please, proofreaders, come out of the woodwork and help out. Another email I just got from Wes Modes is a bit alarming. And that email I'm going to read because it's about something coming up on Monday. Now let's make sure I can pull it up here. He is back in court on Monday. Now, Wes Modes, as you may or may not know, probably you do know, he's also known as Rico Thunder. He's a guy involved with the Trash Orchestra, the creation of the Sub Rosa Cafe, the Free School. He stood up for the Drum Circle and fought for a year in court around that issue. He's also recently been dragged through court for walking in the Last Night Parade, or DIY Last Night Parade, in what seemed to be, for many of us, clearly a selectively enforced attempt to go after activists, and he was one of the activists they're going after. He apparently got an email from his attorney, Jonathan Gettleman, that he is going to be due in court next Monday, and that's only 4 days off. Today is the 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th. That'd be the 16th of August at 8 a.m., and Department 5, I hate to say, is Judge Almquist's Thou Shalt Not Sing, and he's the one who found singing political songs downtown that happened to wake up a day sleeper or unreasonably disturbing noise in the Becky Johnson case. And he also heard the case for when Wes Modes went to trial last month for this walking in a parade, supposedly knowing that there was no permit and therefore being liable for a several hundred dollar citation. Apparently, the new development is not just does he want to try the to give his ruling on the infraction ticket, but he also is going to give a ruling on whether Wes Modes is violating an agreement with the district attorney that he made almost a year ago to obey all laws when he did a plea bargain around the issue of the many charges that they stacked up against him for essentially drumming in a protest fashion when police were assaulting and threatening masses of people in the farmers market parking lot number 4, which used to be where the Drum Circle was, way back in October of 2008. And last year, he took a plea bargain. He agreed to obey all laws. Suddenly, they're cooking up this, claiming that his walking in a parade violates a law, and they may try to put him in jail under a revoked, and it's not quite probation, I think it's some sort of deal made with the DA. The motto here is don't make deals with the DA, perhaps, but he is looking for support. The judge is going to offer a final verdict in the parade infraction, as well as he wants to give a final sentence for the Drum Circle misdemeanor. For the last 8 months, he's had a suspended sentence in which he performed 250 hours of community service, and he's really putting out a plea for court support through the legal in the courts, and I guess that's going to be at 8 a.m. on Monday morning in Department 5. I have to say that Wes Modes has never shown up at a homeless event in the last year or two. Of course, he's been pretty busy. I know he did. He did come and provide a video for the Homies for the Homeless protest at City Hall back in 2007. And in 2008, he and others, myself included, supported the Drum Circle, which involves a lot of homeless people. More recently, the Sub Rosa Cafe, though it's had its disputes with some homeless people, has really been a kind of an oasis for a number of other homeless people who don't have to buy, you don't have to buy anything. Coffee is very cheap. It's only a buck. And there are a lot of free events there and free computer use and a nice library of anarchist literature and historical literature of interesting kinds. So I'm going to be there on Monday morning supporting Wes. I may have to postpone my confrontation with Don Miller if he wants to do it next Monday, or put it off till the afternoon maybe, if that Sentinel editor wants to actually go to the Homeless Services Center and claim that the number of people that we bring there, they'll find beds for them. So therefore, Monica Martinez, the poverty pimpstress who's running the Homeless Services Center, I don't know her, you know, it's not an attempt to be mean to her, it's an attempt to suggest that this kind of discussion that she is doing, where she is making these false claims that there's shelter for people, and that somehow that's okay in the context, it means it's okay to arrest people for sleeping, not coming out against that, to me, it does a profound disservice to homeless people and shows that, you know, she's, it may not be fair to say she's just concerned about her job and her pay and her wage, but she is concerned with maintaining her institution there, which provides some services for some homeless people, but no significant shelter for the majority of homeless people, and no support or little support for people who face harassment from the police, though she does, and the center has for years issued letters stating, you know, on such and such a night there was no shelter after you get a ticket. You can't get this beforehand, and that's what we found last week. So I'll be mentioning this again on Sunday. I'll probably be putting up something on Indie Bay about it. Indie Bay also has some more information on Jillian Greensight, the fired director, or the director who resigned when her position was collapsed up at UCSC as rape education counselor. I also got a report. So if you want to go on to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, you can find out, you can look into the, well, I'm hoping to put up announcements about Wes Modes. There'll be an announcement if we're going to do a protest, the Wes Modes Monday court event, and or if we're going to do a protest out at the Homeless Service Center, that'll be coming up there. I think, in a way, Peace Camp 2010 has got its hands full right now just dealing with City Hall. They weren't able to get over any of them to the, or chose not to come to, Anna and Miguel's permanent injunction hearing. I was there, Ed Fry was there, and Becky Johnson were there. All of us, all of us have homes, or we have at least rooms we live in, and no people from Peace Camp 2010 were there, and so it's, nor was Wes Modes there, for that matter. I'd like to see more cooperation among activists, kind of getting together with each other and helping out. There wasn't much advance notice. In fact, there was virtually none. I got the word last night that Anna and Miguel were going back to trial, and I probably should have known that, because I think it probably was continued from a month ago. The case will be decided, by the way. Will Anna and Miguel be faced with a permanent injunction against sleeping downtown, which means not only are they subject to a citation under the sleeping ban, they're subject to immediate arrest for contempt of court. They've been in this position for the last year. This attempt is to make it permanent. And I don't quite know what to predict, whether it's likely to happen or not. I think what I may do is give a call to activist Ed Fry and see if he he's also an attorney who attended this trial, what his predictions are around this issue, because he's kind of a savvy guy on this stuff, and I'm kind of curious what his thoughts are about this issue. Plus, of course, he's at the middle of, or certainly a big supporter of, the Peace Camp 2010 situation, and let's see if I can raise him on the horn, as we say in the business. And I will try and do that for this what will soon be an archival situation. We're ringing his cell phone now. We'll see if we can get a hold of him. He's probably now, even now, driving the porta potty over to City Hall, where it can be left there at night. We'll see if that's actually happening. Sometimes it's hard to reach folks at this time of night.
Hi, this is Ed. Leave a message, please. Thank you.
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll do
at the tone, please record your message.
We'll try to leave a
message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To send a fax, press 4 now.
Yeah, we get
to
leave
a callback number, press 5.
Stuff. So, Ed, this is Robert at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm broadcasting on the stream, and we have about half an hour left. If you can give us a call at 427-3772, I wanted to get your opinion of how things went at the trial today, the permanent injunction hearing slash trial of Honor Richardson and Miguel de Leon, as well as any thoughts you have on the current Peace Camp 2010 at City Hall. We can talk about this perhaps on Sunday, but I thought you might be available now. 427-3772. So the other thing I'm going to do is try to get a hold of Kerbugger Chris, who's also at camp. And he actually asked me to give him a call. The two of us are slated to go on community TV tomorrow, and I think it's going to be a delayed community TV segment, so maybe that'll be... that'll be something people can view later. He also told me that he was interviewed by National Public Radio, and that's going to be interesting if that gets out. A lot of incredible media that Curbhugger has been successful in getting. Now we're ringing him at Peace Camp 2010 to see how he's doing. Because we're not going out on the radio, hasn't been able to hear this broadcast, but...
Peace Camp 2010.
Hey there, Kerbugger Chris. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm good. You are live on the stream, so to speak.
Yeah, I know. Becky was just streaming it on her iPhone.
Oh, great. Great. I'm glad. If you have any thoughts about anything I said, any corrections or additions, please.
I wasn't able to listen. We had some other stuff going on, so...
Oh, okay. Well, I mentioned that you went NPR on us, and then tomorrow you're going to be community TVing on us, and... You may eventually just go to Hollywood and forget all of us.
Well, that would be great, man. And anytime that's ready to happen, I'd be glad to get up out of here. This is a hard road to hoe, man. They've been hassling us all day. We've had people yelling and screaming at us, and cops niggling over every little detail. And it's definitely not the same ball game as it was over at the courthouse. We're having a different kind of deal down here. It's very stressful, to be honest with you. Very stressful.
Tell us what kind of additional problems you've been having that weren't there at the county building, the county.
Well, the constant presence of SCPD. First of all, I mean they're continuously driving by and trying to find any little thing. Somebody smoking on the sidewalk, a cigarette. Somebody, you know, this or that. There's a lot of big deal about people with the shopping carts. A lot of homeless people push their belongings around in shopping carts. So they've been coming around with city pickup trucks and loading up shopping carts full of belongings and taking them away and stuff. That sort of thing. I mean, just they're going to enforce every possible rule on us they can. And then, of course, there's always the nighttime raids with the citations and the whatnot, possible arrest if you don't cooperate, that kind of thing.
I know when I was there this afternoon, I heard that they had told people they could not put any possessions on the wall.
Right, that's correct.
There's a low-lying wall that people are sitting on and so forth. But I did see a lot of people lying in their sleeping bags. Have they been hassling people sleeping during the day there?
No. Only on the grass, which, you know, that just makes sense anyway. It's actually some pretty nice grass, so.
Have there been any tickets today? I heard that one man had gotten a citation, I guess for an old warrant, but that he wasn't taken to jail. He was just cited and asked to come to court, agree to come to court. And have there been?
I don't know anything about that, actually. We've had one citation. Bob with his puppy was cited the first night we moved, within 30 minutes after we moved. And then last night we had one arrest and five citations.
But none during
the arrest was for non-cooperation with the citation process.
Right. And what about today during the day?
I don't know of any arrests or any problems here today. Other than, like I said, the continuous hassle. So.
How about support? Has there been any support from people who are passing by?
Yeah, we've had one or two troll busters go by and shout at us. Actually, probably about three, I think, today. We managed to get one of them on video, but and then the majority of people that go by are either indifferent or positive in their support.
Mm-hmm. How are your sanitary facilities? I know that there's a bathroom during the day at City Hall often, but...
And at the library, too, so it's pretty good, actually. And then we've got the portage on all night, so I don't think the poo-poo and pee-pee thing is going to be able to be brought up against us at all. I can't see how that's going to happen anyway.
How many people are sleeping or are hanging out there at this time? We're talking with Kerr Bugger.
About 17, 18, something like that.
That sounds like a growing number of people.
It's slowly but surely, but of course it's going to grow a lot more slowly than before because it's going to grow a little bit more slowly this time around than the last time because obviously we're not offering a safe place to sleep. We're offering a place to come sleep and get a ticket. So that's kind of a hard sell, you know, and... For 30 days over at the county courthouse, we were able to offer people sanctuary, and we can't offer that now. There is no safe place anymore to sleep at Santa Cruz. So.
It sounds like your health is improving. I know a couple of days ago you were concerned that you had a pneumonia condition.
I do have pneumonia, and I'm still very, very sick. It's improving, but very, very slowly. The sleep deprivation thing of being woken up every single night is really starting to take its toll. And you know, there's a reason why sleep deprivation is a good form of torture. It works. So.
But it hasn't yet thoroughly worked on you, eh?
Well, it has. It increases your depression. It decreases your morale, decreases your creativity, your ability to respond to, you know, proactively in your environment. It slowly degrades, you know, mental processes and intellectual processes, and that's what's happening here. And it also degrades your health. And so my recovery is nowhere near what it could be if I was getting a good night's rest and being left alone.
Now, I've heard that some city employees have taken a special hostility toward you, some woman with a blower.
Yeah. She pretty much just assaulted us. She came out today and said, "Looky here, I'm coming out with the blower. I'm going to blow stuff all over your shit. I'm going to blow stuff in your face. I'm going to blow stuff on your dogs." And then she turned to the security guard that was posted here, first alarm security guard that's been posted on us during the day by the city, and she said, "And if you're still standing here, I'm going to blow you too." And then she walked away, and she proceeded to do exactly that. Unfortunately, NPR radio chose that time to call me for an interview, and I wasn't able to videotape much of it, but what we did do is we got some good photographs of her blowing the dog. It's that little itty-bitty dog that we have living down here with us, and she blew it so hard it actually tumbled.
Wait a minute, blowing
over
the dog. This sounds like a porno film here. You better watch your step, Kirby.
Well, that's what it was. It is what it is. So
I mean, what, this is a person supposed to what? Blow leaves in front of this? What is her function? We're talking about Mia Duquette, a city employee, right?
Yeah, that's her.
Right. This is the woman who 8 years ago took an instrumental role in charging an activist with writing. Chalking end the sleeping ban on the curb of a downtown in erasable chalk and having her jailed for it.
Yeah, she's a real hassle. Those of us who work the downtown area as panhandlers or buskers, they're already familiar with her and her attitude towards homeless people. It comes as no surprise, to be honest with you.
So what message do you have for the handful or who knows, the thousands of people who are listening on the internet here for Peace Camp 2010? I know you put out a call in the past for blankets and prepared food and...
Blankets and food, you know, we can always use a Virgin Mobile phone card. They are available at 7-Eleven and Radio Shack. That's something that's been a particular burden on us financially. Prepared food, not groceries. Blankets always, and some support. You know, people can call the mayor, people can, you know, call the Santa Cruz Police Department, they can, you know, email the mayor at city council. The address for the mayor, for the whole city council is citycouncil@santacruzcitycouncil.com, and that's the email, citycouncil@santacruzcitycouncil.com. They can send an email to the city council and tell them to bring a halt to this persecution of what I consider to be a constitutionally protected demonstration and protest. You know, we need support. We need people. If people are willing, they could come down here and sweep for the night and get tickets. They can also stay up and help us do what we call sweep watch, where we have people up watching for to protect the folks who are sweeping here in this open urban environment. And so there's all sorts of ways people can support. They can give me a call. You got the number there in the studio, so you can give them that. They can visit the website at peacecamp2010.blogspot.com, and there's all sorts of things there that they can do to inform themselves and get involved. So we need the support. We need the support of the community, because without it, we're not going to win. I mean, they're going to crush us. We're under siege. Every night they're waking us up, and it's becoming actually kind of relentless and sort of brutal, if you ask me. So,
are new people showing up to join the protest?
In slow increments. Again, it's a hard sell now. You know, the people that are coming in knowing that they're going to be fucked with, and so it's not the easiest sell in the world.
I got you. Well, I'm talking with Kerbugger Chris here at Peace Camp 2010 at 809 Center Street, right across from the main library in front of City Hall. I guess there's still spots for people to lay out their sleeping bags if they want.
Plenty of room for everybody. Robert, I have to let you go because dinner just arrived, so I have to organize that.
All right.
I love you all. My greetings to all the listeners. And all I would ask, I guess, is people pray for us because we're getting a rock in a hard place here, so we're innocent. We're just homeless people who just want to get a good nice rest.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Have a good one, Robert. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And should have asked about Ed Fry, but perhaps we can do that on Sunday. I've got about 15 minutes left in the show. If anybody is listening in who wants to call in with comments or thoughts, you can. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I do want to point out that the media coverage of this is continuing. It was another front-page story in the Sentinel. I think that makes 4 or 5 days running that there's been a front-page story, or at least mostly front-page coverage with a couple of maybe one day when there wasn't. And editorials and letters, mostly hostile, a poll hostile. But again, and Kerbugger sounded a little down, more so than in the past. So I've got to say that he's persevering, but it's taken their toll on these folks out there, and they can use whatever support they can get. 427-3772 is the call-in number, and I think what I'm going to do is play a few more interviews. Let's see if there's anything else I want to bring up here before I disappear here from the show. The drum circle did have some problems too, and I guess I was thinking that drum circle Dave might have been a person who wants to call in on that. But let's hear some more interviews from Peace Camp 2010. These are from actually this morning. We're going to hear Linda LeMaster, who is a chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force, who actually slept at Peace Camp 2010 last night, talk a bit about what she saw, what she observed, and what went down. Second night at City Hall, where there were 5 tickets and 1 arrest.
Here at Peace Camp 2010 or nearby, it's about what time is it? It's about 8:10 in the morning. Stern, blue-shirted private personal armed security guards are stalking the sidewalk, or at least one is. But I'm talking with Linda LeMaster here on August 12th, 2010. It's an overcast morning, and Linda, you spent the night here?
Most of it. I got here just around 11:30. Got a little sleep. Around slightly after 4, the police arrived, first 3 cars, and working in pairs and trios. Finally, I guess the supervisor showed up and held up that post there while all the rest of the officers did the work.
Held up the post, meaning he made sure the light post didn't move from where it was standing. He secured it in its location.
Yeah, I guess that was his part.
And do we know any of the names of any of these officers?
No, I didn't. I couldn't see the numbers. I got their pictures, though.
Total of the officer number was?
Total officers, let's see, that were active, 1, 2, 3, 5.
And a couple of inactive ones, or one inactive one, perhaps?
Yeah, at least one.
So,
You say that the first person approaches a guy called Ocean who asked for a lawyer and had just arrived in town and had just gone to sleep?
I don't know that he was just in town, but he just got to this demonstration. I was told by the guy that was bedded down in a bag beside him. Huh. And I got the feeling he wasn't very oriented. I don't know if it's because he's asleep or he just was new to this protest thing. But the officers woke him up. They demanded an ID. He said he doesn't have one. And so they got him on his feet, and they're kind of moving him around. They shoved him, literally, like, collared him, picked him up by the shoulder. One officer did, but the other one was right there escorting him by the elbow. Made him sit on this beautiful stone ledge.
It's right on the sidewalk here.
Asking him more questions. And then they tell him to get up, and before he even has a chance to respond, they pick him up. Then they're arresting him. They put him in cuffs.
Did they say what they were charging him with?
Yes, finally. They were playing some head trip with him about, he's saying he wanted a lawyer, and the cops kept changing their response to that. And then
how did they change it?
And then when they pulled the plastic cuffs out, he said, what am I being arrested for? And they said, camping on city property.
Really?
Camping. Yeah, yeah. But there was, they didn't say it. They didn't volunteer anything until he asked that, and that was a
camping
good
thing. Camping on city property is not a misdemeanor.
You know what the officer said.
Interesting. And then you said that they gave different responses to his request for a lawyer. What did they say?
Well, they got him up by saying, yeah, you can have a lawyer. And then by the time they'd pushed him over here on the ledge, they're saying, you'll see your lawyer in court.
Right. How many people were sleeping here last night?
I counted 14 visibly. They were all in this front half of the city hall. I didn't see anyone behind on the two-story part. Mm-hmm. I did a walkabout of this whole neighborhood. There were about 5 or more people most of the night across the street.
To the library.
The no quiet zone, yeah, on the side of the library. Mm-hmm. And as Donna Dice said, they were laughing and having fun all night. It wasn't quiet, but they weren't really rowdy either. I concur. I'm parked way over at the other, halfway across the block. And every now and then I'd hear one big laugh.
You were sleeping in your car?
No comment.
I see. Not much to be caught with your down, eh, big girl?
Maybe it's not my car.
Maybe not. Maybe it's not you. Maybe it was somebody who looks like you.
Nobody saw me sleeping in my car.
So once this raid hit, how many did people generally leave? Did they stand up and start singing the national anthem? What happened?
As people began to wake up, most people didn't even wake up until the arrested guy was already in the police car. Uh-huh. And the guy who was sleeping kind of next to him tried to be helpful, but it wasn't much either of us could do. And then slowly people are waking up, and I'd say 1 out of 5 left as they saw the cops. And then a little later, as the cops are going systematically through citing people who had to sign, a few more people left. Mm-hmm. And some of them didn't take their stuff, and some did.
Did anybody go back to sleep?
Yes. Uh-huh. The woman that was near Crow got back to sleep, and she's just waking up now. I don't think anyone else got back to sleep.
You're talking about Red, Crow's partner.
I can't say. Maybe. That person.
That woman there?
Yeah.
Oh, that was Red. So Red just went back to sleep.
She got back to sleep. I think Crow kept her from being too woke up, but she did get a citation, and I assume
she... Do you know who got citations?
I don't know all the people, Robert, but there were at least 6 tickets, mm-hmm. and the one guy that got arrested.
So 6 including the arrestee, or...?
No.
6 plus an arrestee.
7 if he got cited, but that wasn't clear. He declined signing the ticket, too.
So now, is that why he was arrested, because he declined to sign the citation?
What I feel I heard was because he didn't have an ID. And I'm inferring a little bit, they didn't like his basic attitude.
But he did refuse to sign the citation?
Right.
That's cause for being taken into custody to determine who you are, because you're not giving a promise to appear, unless the police decide to trust you in this matter.
They could have decided to trust him. Obviously, in this instance, they decided to arrest him. And he was still waking up, I thought, when they were putting him in the car.
You are a sharp observer, Linda.
Kind of a shock to the guy, in my opinion.
Any other comments about the evening's festivities?
Well, I can tell you they came in at this side, so Fumiko was the second or third person to be rousted by them.
Was he sighted?
I think he left real fast. I'm not sure he got a ticket.
Go ahead. Anything else?
Let's see. What else would be important right now? I'm not sure. They didn't ticket the porta potty.
Very good. Were there any hoots and hollers from vigilante hasslers or any problems of that sort?
In my opinion, the amount of time I was up, which is about half the time I've been here since 11:30 or so, most of the people passing by were friendly, if not supportive.
How could you tell?
Well, they'd respond if you said hi, or they'd let their dogs come up and sniff around.
You're talking about people on foot. What about people in cars?
People in cars. When the bars closed, there was traffic. There was hardly any traffic until between 12:30 and 2:30. And there were a lot of cars with glass trucks coming through here loud or racing, both this street that I was on and the center street in front of the Civic. But I guess that's legal in the nighttime.
We've been talking with
Linda Leemaster, Lighthouse Linda. I didn't think that people came here to taunt the homeless, but there are a few cars that went by and they creeped slowly like they wanted to check it out.
Now, I know you've written about your experience sleeping over at the county building when this protest was over there. How can people access what you wrote there?
Oh, I have a blog. It's called Linda's Hearth on Google, or Hearth by Linda, all one word, hearthbylinda.blogspot.com. If you can find the Peace Camp 210 blog, you can find my blog. And I also have a page on Facebook under my name.
That's L-E-M-A-S-T-E-R, Leemaster?
Yes, it is, generically.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Here are some notes from...
And that's about it for Bathroom Spirits Broadsides, except I'm going to try to do a quick update from Drum Circle Dave that I got. But I hear a knocking at the door, and I'm assuming it's not the FCC, but let's hear a little bit of that as we go out here. Whoops. Well, hang on there, visitor. I'll be right over. I'll have to try this again, and I think we actually may have to postpone the Drum Circle update for another time. Let's hear a little of the Capitol steps as we leave. Sort of some, you know, rather tepid satire, and we will kind of leave it at that for this evening. But again, I urge you to go to Santa Cruz Peace Camp blogspot and check it out. Look up Santa Cruz Peace Camp, and you'll find the proper address to go to.
Merry Christmas, infidels. Here's a special message from Al-Qaeda to help you celebrate the season. Deck the hall with bows to Allah.
Allah, la, 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 la.
Throw some rocks and join Hezbollah.
Bala, la, 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 la.
Come and hear our ululation. While we fight and haunt your nation. See the blazing car before us. Shoot your gun and join the chorus. Why do we act so unstable? In our cave we don't have cable.
I told you to pay.
Follow at Bin Laden's urging. We're running out of virgins.
Ooh, la, 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 la.
Virgins quit and some were laid off. We had funds with Bernie Madoff.
Hello, America. I'm Sarah Palin here, you betcha, and I'm here to say Merry Christmas and Happy Birthday to the baby Jesus. Yeah, you betcha. Did you know that Jesus is more than 2,000 years old? Gosh, that's almost as old as John McCain. Now, Christmas is the greatest of all of the American holidays. And up here in the Palin household, we don't celebrate those Hanukkah Kwanzas. No siree. Come on up to Alaska, and I'll show ya. Have a gosh, oh golly Christmas. It's the kind that we adore. Santa stops, and then he hops to Russia right next door. Have a Palin family Christmas. Trim the tree with Todd and Jack. Welcome God with Piper Todd, Willow, Trig, and Truck. Today the Christmas play had a great big hole. Bristle got fired from the Virgin Mary role. Have a betcha you know Christmas, every present will appear in your lap in fancy wrap. There are no newspapers here. Look there, the manger's bare. We need a child, no doubt. I guess I wouldn't mind popping one more out. I have a Todd and Sarah Christmas. The Wasilla is a pit. And then halfway through the Christmas ham, I'll just say, I quit!
And that's going to wrap it up for Bathrop Spears Broadsides for today. You can, of course, get more abuse on Sunday, starting at 9:30 or even earlier.
Possibly,
depending on the Thomas Levitt's appearance in the studio or not.
I think he's coming back.
He's coming back. I can see that somebody's been messing with the knobs here.
It wasn't me, Doctor. I wouldn't know what to do.
Well, anyway, we're not over-modulating per se. So,
Just wondering.
Having trouble finding the proper. It's not an audio one, and it's not an audio two. What the heck the hell's going on here?
Should be on audio two.
I'll take a look.
Robert's trying to find under FRSC programs.
Oh, well, there you are.
Can you spell Huff?
I'm working on it.
I'm Uncle Dennis, and I am back in the studio after a significant vacation, only to find that we're not broadcasting. The landlord, for whatever
perverse
or otherwise, whatever he had in mind, decided that, well... You're off the air now. No waiting until we had a new place. So, if you're listening to www.freakradio.org, thank you for listening. If you are in the Santa Cruz area and have a spot for the free radio transmitter, give us a call. We have a call coming in on line one, Robert.
Oh, okay, we've got a call coming in, so I'm going to have to go. I'll see you shortly.
Hello? Okay. Well, let me get into some music, and I'll get back to talking with you. Okay, hold on. It's my... listener from L.A. who still can't hear us because we are still streaming on www.freakradio.org. But apparently we need a new transmitter site. If you've got one, give us a call. If not, you're going to have to listen to Air One. Don't leave without your CD. No. Anyway. So, right now we're going to get back to the music here on Freak Radio. And be with you up until 11 o'clock tonight. So, I can't say stay tuned, but stay streaming with Freak Radio.
I would like to play something called No Smoking.
loving you, there's a way. Ooh, everybody say you can do anything. I wanna talk about love and trying to hold somebody the way I love you, babe. And I've been loving you, babe, in my brain. Oh, I can see your face again. Be so blind, honey, like I did. I know I was blind, and I tell you that I was very, very blind. Oh, but I'm just a girl. Can't you just take a look at me and tell that I live, honey, I live and I breathe for you. Don't you know I do?